This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
My name is John Kelly. I was married for probably 15 years. We had three daughters, one of whom is in the room with me today. She's the youngest of three. Marriage broke up many years ago, and I brought up the children on my own without being involved in any other woman.
John, when you were growing up, did you have any sense of your homosexuality?
Yes, I think when I was 13 or 14, I presumed I was gay without knowing what the term was. Yes. My mother once, in fact, she found some, I think they were nudist magazines, which was all available many years ago under the mattress. Why I hid them under the mattress, I'm not quite sure. Mothers in those days used to turn the mattresses over once a week. All she did was place them on the pillow. So nothing was ever said to me by my parents.
When did you first have words to describe kind of what you were feeling?
That's interesting. I don't know. I knew what I was and what I wanted from that age, from 13, 14 or whatever it was. You didn't articulate it, though. At least those days, I didn't. It was just the way life was, and you got on with it.
Did anybody have conversations about being gay or make comments about gay people in any way? Was that word used then?
No, I don't think so. I was working in a department store in Wellington, and I got seduced, I suppose is the term, by two guys who were working there. One of them we used to see from the double-decker tram on the way to college. And because he was a bit flamboyant, well, he had an umbrella, which men didn't carry in those days, and there was a few catcalls from the top of the tram, which I kept quiet about, of course. That's the only thing that happened then.
So people were identifying other people as different in some way, or boys were?
Yes. Yes.
Hmm. So I'm Emma, and I'm the youngest of Dad's children. And Dad raised us here on the North Shore. And my sister Patria and I used to always joke that Dad was the only good heterosexual man we knew. He could sew. He cooked. He talked to us about periods and all those things, you know. He was both mother and father to us, and we just always thought he was a great example of what a heterosexual man could be.
Must have been a bit of an eye opener a few years later, then.
Yeah, and then, what do you want to talk about?
No, we can.
Oh, well, something I was thinking about since we were going to do this interview is how when I started university at about 17, I started hanging out at Women's Space. Do you remember?
Yes.
Nearly all my friends were lesbians.
Right.
And I used to have all these amazing discussions with them about relationships and feminism, and I used to say I can still be a feminist and be with a man. But I also had relationships with women at that time, and we used to talk about that. Do you remember?
Vaguely, yes.
Do you remember I told you about walking down the street holding hands with Sally and getting hassled? And I came home and I was just astounded because I walked down the road holding hands with men all the time and no one had ever said a thing, and suddenly it was different. And I was so naive. I was on K Road. Why would anyone hassle us? I remember coming home and being outraged and, you know, talking to you. And we talked quite a lot about sexuality at that time,
I think. I can't remember that specifically, but one of the women you worked with was at Patria's house when I brought Graham round. This man became my partner, fairly flamboyant, and I realised in the very early stages that there was no way this relationship was going to be hidden. And in fact, your friend made a comment after we left.
That was Sally.
Sally, yes.
She said, "Oh, is your dad gay?" And I said, "Well, looks like it." And that was the end of the conversation. And she was very excited, because she was an adamant lesbian.
That must have been an interesting discussion after we left then, because Patria was there.
Sally didn't say it in front of Patria.
Oh, okay.
But Petria and I definitely had conversations afterwards.
Mm.
Dad's got a boyfriend. What's going on? Isn't this exciting?
I can't remember specifically saying anything to you guys, but I must have done, presumably.
Do you want me to tell the story of you coming out to me?
Oh, go for it. I can't
when
remember.
I was working in the ferry shop in Birkenhead in High Point Moor.
In what shop?
In the ferry shop.
And where you go?
And you came in, and it must have been a few days after we'd met Graham, and you said, I'm just here to tell you I'm a fairy, because we're in the fairy shop. And then you kicked up your heel in a joking manner, and you waltzed out. And I couldn't even follow you because I was working. Yeah. And I just thought it was lovely. Good. And I was terribly happy that you came out. I just thought that was the best thing ever.
Yes, Petria was quite nice about it too.
Yeah.
Not everybody in the family was, but that didn't last very long.
No.
Well, I don't remember the fairy shop story.
And what about friends?
There was no problem there at all, I told people, and no hassle, I didn't lose any friends over it. Chris, in fact, he was annoyed because I'd been hiding it from him all these years, but he was great.
Mm. Yes, and Chris is he was one of Dad's best friends who died last year.
Mm.
Yeah. But you and he used to have funny conversations, didn't you, because of words like straight. And if, what
yes,
did he say?
Well, he used to object to the word straight because it implied that we guys were bent.
Mm.
And I pointed out that it wasn't his choice, it was our way of putting it, so he'd have to put up with it.
With you calling him straight?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I'd introduce him as my straight mate.
John, just going back a wee bit, why did you get married?
It was the right thing to do at that time. It was the woman I wanted to get married to. Hindsight's a lovely thing. I couldn't have done it if I had known. What I would have done otherwise, I wouldn't have had children, of course. But it was. I didn't have any parental pressure. In fact, I proposed to my wife and we got married the following Friday. And I almost forgot to tell my parents because it was just the thing we were doing. And that whole marriage thing was far beyond me at that time. I wasn't interested in that at all.
What do you mean? You mean like having a big ceremony and having all the family involved?
Mm. Yep.
Just didn't occur to you that you wanted to do anything like that?
Don't, didn't you? You just have to get hands on someone.
And you were part of the same friendship circle?
Yes.
How did you meet?
How did we meet? We met at a gay party, actually. Oddly enough. We had mutual friends.
Wasn't it the end of 6 o'clock closing? Wasn't it a party? The day at the end of 6 o'clock.
You have a better memory than me, yes. A group of us had been to the Great Northern Hotel to celebrate 6 o'clock closing. We went to a party afterwards, and Joan was there, yeah.
And that's how you met?
Yes.
And it was love at first sight?
No. No, it was eased into, I think.
Mm. And some of your mutual friends have stayed your mutual friends for the rest of your lives, haven't they?
Yes.
Even beyond the end of the marriage and...
Yep. Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't lose any friends either through marriage or through the end of marriage, no.
Mm.
When you were married, did you find that you were hiding your homosexuality or was it just kind of out in the open?
No, it was hidden, yes, totally hidden when I was married. Joan knew I was gay when I was married because I told her before we were married. But like all women, she thought she'd cure me, I think.
Can you describe what that's like, kind of living that? It's not really a double life, but actually outwardly being kind of heterosexual and being homosexual at the same time.
Well, it wasn't difficult because you couldn't do anything about it. There's no way when I was younger I could say that I was homosexual. It was illegal. immoral. It wasn't fattening at the time. You're not stoic about it, but you just live your life. Your life was what it was. That side of it was there, this side was here, and that's what you did, because you had no choice. It wasn't difficult to do, because you did it.
You've always... one of the things I've always thought about you is that you've made quite strong statements about you just get on with what you've got, you don't regret, and you don't live in the past, and you just get on with it. Is that part of that for you? Is just, this is what I got, this is the hand I've been dealt, and I'll just get on with it?
I think so, yes.
Hmm. And even though I didn't know where that sort of thinking was coming from, I've always found that quite helpful to think, what's the point in regretting anything? Or not just...
Well, there's no point, is there?
No, no. But did you have friends who were sort of more out than you at that time?
Well, you met all my friends. Yeah. People like Gordon and Ray.
So they, people who never were, married?
Yeah, they were my friends before I was married, and they were friends during my marriage. Mm-hmm. And they're still friends.
Yeah. And no one ever gave you a hard time?
No, not ever, no.
Mm. And people like Ray and Gordon always seem to enjoy having us kids around, didn't they? They always gave us Christmas cards and birthday cards.
And yeah. And you call them both uncle, I think, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were just sort of part of life.
Part of the family. Part of the broader family, yes.
Yeah.
So I was probably lucky having friends like that, I guess.
I think so. Mm. And I didn't know they were gay when I was younger. They were just, you know... I wouldn't have cared if I knew. They were just Uncle Ray and Uncle Gordon. We turned up for birthday parties and sent us cards at Christmas time.
Right.
So why do you think there was a need to come out later on to Emma? I mean, if you were kind of...
Well, I think... I thought I was explaining that before with the friend I had then, the partner I had. He was quite flamboyant. Obviously gay. And if I was walking down somewhere with him... it would be fairly obvious, I would imagine, that we would have been a couple, so I thought there was no point in this. And my thinking about him was that there was no point in me being embarrassed by him, because that's the way he was. So I wasn't going to hide it any further.
And we'd all moved out of home by then.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And was that part of your thinking, that you didn't have to protect us from judgments?
No, probably not. Again, it's just what you're doing at the time. I don't think I thought of that, no.
Did the North Shore feel like a place where people were out to you? Did you know many gay people on the North Shore?
No, I don't think I know any. Didn't know any, no.
Do you find it hard to talk about kind of gay issues or homosexuality?
No. Details, yes, in front of my children, yes, but otherwise, no, not at all.
So it depends on context then, doesn't it? It depends on who you're with, what you're saying, what you're not. Because something that struck me, and you can tell me that I'm wrong, is that you are more relaxed about talking about gay things on the South Shore than the North Shore.
Oh, why is that?
Because that's where all the events are. The events aren't here. Your mates aren't here.
Well, there's no need to talk about such things over here in that case.
Yeah, it always seems to me like it's a bit different here, because I've always felt this is quite a repressive community.
No, I don't think that at all.
Okay, well that's interesting.
I suppose everyone I know lives over the shore, so over the other side of the bridge. So that's
that's right. Apart from Chris.
Repressive in what way?
Well, I've always felt the North Shore was quite conservative, and it feels when I'm down here like I'm in a kind of little country town where everyone knows each other's business. Maybe you just feel that way about where you grow up.
So, John, can you tell me about raising children by yourself and the kind of values you try to impart?
I probably should ask Emma that, what her values are, would be easier. But... the fact they were girls was interesting for a start, because I'm not a girl and I had to deal with females and female things. I don't know what values I imparted. I think that I tried to make them honest, be honest. Tried to teach them to be gardeners and cooks. I'm not sure it worked with all of them. I obviously don't compartmentalise things. I just, as we've said before, I get on and do things without saying this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm going to try and make my daughters do. So it's a bit hard for me to answer that question.
Another way of looking at it would be to say, what are the values that you admire in other people? What are the things that...
I think honesty is always the main thing.
What do you like?
Caring for people, not dumping on others. What were you going to say? Are you going to help me?
Sorry, I was just going to say, is there anything about me that you admire that might have been something to do with how I was raised? Do you think?
I don't know. You're the one academic of the family. Must have come from me somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about when things would happen, say at school. Say I'd get a hard time at school. I remember sometimes the boys would hassle me at school. And I'd come home and I'd burst into tears and you'd always give me a cuddle and you'd always make me feel better. And then you say, okay, what are you going to say back to them? And we'd sort something out. And it'd be something silly, it'd be some, you know, kind of line. But what you did was make me feel that I was okay and then that I could speak back. Not walk away, not pretend it wasn't happening, but speak back. And I think that's been helpful to me, but I think sometimes I probably have done it a little too much. But I always felt that you encouraged us to speak our minds, and it's important when you're a girl because you can easily get sucked into thinking you have to be passive. I never got that impression from you.
No. You certainly weren't. None of you were passive.
No. Do you remember telling me a story about going into farmers when they had a sale as a father?
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah, that was fairly early in the people. I had to do things like, because I didn't have a lot of money, I had to learn to sew. And there was an occasion when all my girls ran out of knickers, so Farmers had a sale. When Farmers was up on Hobson Street, they had a big, big building there. So I went in there thinking I could discreetly ask a salesperson for some pairs of panties for my children. But instead of that, there's a huge bins with all these women scrabbling in them. And I stood there and thought, they're going to think I'm the worst pervert here. However, I thought, bugger this, I've got to do it. So I dived in with all these women and picked out all the knickers I wanted, and I sort of thought I never looked back since then. Any, I could do anything that was slightly odd concerning my daughters.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It was probably a turning point.
The knicker incident that was the turning point in your life?
Yes.
And the other thing I'm thinking about values, is how we had an open house at Park Hill Road. So Friday nights, everyone would turn up at our house.
Well, it was beautifully sited, that house, because people, you know, friends would drive past it. And yes, we did have an open house. That was nice, wasn't it?
It was.
People would call in passing, which just doesn't seem to happen a lot these days.
No.
To a lot of people.
You never know who'd be there, but it would always be you'd... And if it was winter, you had the fire on, and we'd have toast in front of the fire. And I remember other people commenting on how lovely it was and how unusual it was to just turn up at someone's house and they feed you and sit down for an hour's chat.
Mm.
Chris and Delia would come around on Friday nights for a glass of wine.
Yes, and one of them would invariably fall asleep in front of the fire.
And the other one would keep chatting.
Mm. Yeah.
And those are lovely memories for me.
Good.
Mm.
Well, we had some interesting birthdays too, didn't we?
The pink tablecloth?
I can't remember the pink tablecloth.
The hot pink tablecloth.
Oh, the tablecloth, yes.
Vile.
Hmm. And we had, was it one of your birthdays up at Snell's Beach?
Oh, yes.
We were given access to a batch up there. It was a rainy day on Emma's birthday. And we piled into the little rowing boat with a birthday cake, candles, and an umbrella. Yeah. Rowed out onto the bay and sang happy birthday and blew the candles out, didn't we?
We did.
Mm.
Well, lots of lovely and unusual memories like that.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I never felt like we were like the other families, and I never had a problem with it. It was always a good thing.
Well, I think... I don't know whether all men have a female side, but I'm sure I must have had one to be able to cope with bringing up girls, even if it didn't show. It must have been there.
Why is it a female side?
The nurturing side, I don't
nurturing.
Know. Yeah.
That warmth and... I hope all men have it, but I'm not sure that all men feel they're able to express it.
True.
Did you have any relationships throughout, once the marriage had ended, did you have any relationships up until you kind of came out?
Yes.
Yeah. Any you're willing to talk about in front of me? I'll block my ears.
Well, no, because they all were with women anyway, as you may recall. Was that what your question was asking?
Well, were they either men or women?
Not any. I had an affair. I had two affairs. I suppose that's the way you put it with women. Yes. And if anything occurred with men, it obviously hasn't stuck in my mind. So they certainly wouldn't be regarded as affairs, no.
You don't have to answer this question, but I want to ask, because I know when the saunas and things opened, I mean, did you visit places like that, or do you not want to say?
Oh, certainly not when I was married.
Okay.
No, when you're.
But after you're married?
After, yes.
Yeah. And were there magazines and things? You mentioned a nudist magazine from when you were a kid. I've never heard about nudist magazines before. Were they like?
Oh, they were naturist magazines, I think. I can remember Lynn Hiron when we were still married. She came around with her husband, and Joan and I had a couple of these magazines. And Lynn looked through them, and her eyes got bigger and bigger, and she said to her husband, "You told me that once you'd seen one, you'd seen them all. But that's not true."
That's great. When did Ouch magazine start, do you know?
I have no idea. I wouldn't know what year it started. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah. But you'd seen magazines, you knew they were around, magazines like that?
I must have done, yes. Yes.
Did you find the people you were meeting in saunas were coming from similar backgrounds, like that they had been married or... were currently married?
Well, you're talking about recently now, not you know, this is not way back. There are a lot of married people in saunas, yes. Still married, as far as I can tell, yeah.
Do you talk about it?
No.
Do you know because of rings, or how do you know?
Oh,
or do you just know?
Well, I suppose must be discussed somewhere along the line.
Do you reckon the climate has changed considerably in terms of acceptance
of yes, totally.
People over time? Yeah.
Yes. You've only got to go past or in one of the family bar or something like that up in Cranghaven Road, and half the people in there are straight anyway.
Mm.
So there's a good mixture these days, which is a lovely thing. I'm sure there are exclusive gay places besides saunas that guys can go to, but I don't. Oh, Urge is one of them, isn't it? Mm. But it's a good mix these days.
Well, was all the family accepting?
Yes, my brother in Sydney has no problem with it. I don't know about my sister in South Africa. I presume she knows.
We've never discussed it.
No, I don't know. But niece in Australia, no problem. So I've been very lucky that no one has hassled me, no one has given me a hard time. And no friends have left because of it either.
Looking then from your perspective, Emma, when Dad comes into the shop and kind of comes out, how do you feel?
Well, I was really excited. You know, as I've said, I was hanging out at Women's Space a lot at that time and having a lot of conversations with people about being gay, being straight, being feminist, being not feminist and all these things. And so I just thought it was, I thought it was pretty cool. I thought, oh, my dad's not a conservative heterosexual man from the North Shore after all. But, you know, I was 21 and I guess where I was quite a different place, and it just didn't seem to be a big deal. Now, of course, my friends thought it was great. And my friends who wondered if I was a lesbian, I think, probably thought, oh, well, maybe it runs in the family.
Hmm.
I don't know. But, yeah, it was never a thing for me. And I think it was my first time to see Dad as a separate person, not just my dad, but a human who had a life beyond the looking after of me. Yeah, I think that was a big part. And it was so exciting to see Dad in a relationship, because I hadn't seen you in a relationship ever. So for me, that was cool too. Yeah. And even though that relationship didn't work out, he was a good talker, and so we would have conversations that we hadn't had before, and you guys, you know, went off and did your thing, and I thought it was exciting.
My other daughter was pleased for various reasons, because she eventually came out herself, and she was able to do that because I had. Although I'm not quite sure whether she had known she was gay when I did, or whether that came later. But she was supportive because she was herself.
Mm. Yeah, my memory is when she was younger, she tried to talk about it, being gay, and we sort of shut the conversation down. That's her memory too, of saying when she was younger, I'm gay, and us saying, no, you're not, or something silly like that, and that was the end of the conversation. So there was a bit of, oh, Dad's been gay all this time, you didn't talk about it with me. But then she got over it. And, I mean, you guys, you've always said that you two were quite similar. And so you used to rub each other up the wrong way a bit, but now you guys get along very well.
Mm.
And it's been interesting to see your relationship change too, over time. Mm. I don't see you as similar, but you've always said some things about her were similar to you.
Mm. Interesting that she used to say, when she was little, she used to say, when I grow up to be a man... And used to think of just something that kids say, you know.
And now she's a mechanic.
No, she's not. She's a welder.
She's a welder.
Get it right, girl.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, John, how did you feel when, you know, your daughter was coming out? I mean, did you expect your children potentially to be gay or lesbian?
No, not in the slightest. I was surprised. I was a bit unhappy for her, actually, because it isn't necessarily an easy road to go down. But I guess that didn't last long. But she's quite content with herself now, so it's nice.
I remember her saying that when she'd initially said at 14 she thought she was gay. She remembers you saying, it's too hard.
I don't even remember telling me that.
Yeah, interesting, eh?
Mm.
That's my memory of it. I feel a bit bad because I'm quoting someone else, but she said, that's what you said, that it's too hard. Which makes sense of what you just said.
Yeah.
That you could see it as a tough road, but maybe it's a different time now. And do you feel like you have something in common with her that you didn't have before, once she came out?
No. No, lesbians are different to gay people.
Now that's an interesting conversation. Are we going there?
I know. No, no. The only thing I have in common with her is that she's my daughter, same as you are.
Yeah.
I don't think there's an extra bond because she's gay, not at all.
So do you see people in terms of sexuality? You know how some people box people into gay or straight. Do you see people in that way?
No, I don't. And even big people, I don't see as big people, or little people as little people. Someone says, oh, she's very short, and I think, God, so she is. That doesn't really register on my radar.
Yeah.
So, no.
I feel a bit like that too, you know. I'm always a bit bewildered by how people put people in. Oh, he's gay. Oh, that makes sense. I don't quite understand that conversation. Maybe that's because of the way we've grown up.
Could be.
Well, let's go back and just cover that gay-lesbian difference. What do you think?
I knew I shouldn't have said that. I don't know. I don't know what I meant by it now. What was the context in which I said it?
So you said Patrice's lesbian, so she's, you know, that being lesbian is different from being a gay man. So you're talking about gender difference. Are you talking about being a woman or being a man?
I think I'm just talking about gender differences, yes. Gay women do seem to lead different lives to that which gay men do. And it's always a bit sad to me that there's not a lot of, crossover between them. I don't mean sexually crossover, I mean verbally. Often, two don't mix. I suppose that's what I'm talking about with the difference. I don't know why that is. It seems a shame to me.
I was thinking about that in terms of the Mates and Lovers book this morning, which its subtitle is The History of Gay New Zealand, and I immediately thought, it's not the history of gay New Zealand, it's the history of gay male New Zealand. And I wonder, as a woman, if sometimes in the conversations about being gay, women feel they're left out of them, of those conversations sometimes. I don't know.
Well, I suppose if you're going by, say, Express magazine, there's more, usually more articles on and about men than there are about women, but that's possibly because I think the editors are male.
The editor of Express has been a woman for a while.
Okay. Well, perhaps the content has changed and I haven't noticed.
Oh, there's definitely been rows about that.
Hmm.
I know there's been conversations about why is this male-focused. And when I used to do the BFM show that you used to listen to, so I used to do the Girls' Own show with Frankie Hill back in the day, and In the Pink was on after us. And the boys who did In the Pink were fun, and the girls were serious and slightly scary. And really, it did feel like that, because when there was a BFM function, the boys always got invited. We didn't get invited with the other DJs to the functions. And I thought, why is that? In my experience of being a feminist, I find that women are often perceived as being sort of a bit serious and dour, but men are fun. Do you know what I mean?
Sort of.
There's a playfulness in the understanding of what it is to be a gay man, perhaps. Well, that's the stereotype that gets presented.
Well, the stereotype, those guys who ran that program were very flamboyantly gay, weren't they?
And they were fun.
Camp is the word.
Mm.
Which a lot of gay men are not.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, you know, Frankie and I were a bit more political. But it did feel like there was a gender divide there, you know. And I guess it was called Girls' Own Show, so it wasn't necessarily a gay show. But, you know, In the Pink was two boys doing a sort of a gay show. But, you know, Frankie was a very out woman.
Mm.
Everyone knew who Frankie Hill was. And we would have a lot of, I mean, I remember having Anne, who was running Hero Parade, on at the time as a guest. And Anne said on the radio, bisexuals shouldn't be allowed in the Hero Parade. And Frankie turned off my microphone before she hoed into Anne. It was really, really interesting. And, you know, so we have these quite big political discussions. Don't know if they happen in the Pink, but I think we were seen as a little bit too hardcore. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever afraid, John, of being seen as that kind of stereotypical flamboyant gay man?
No. So I never have been, so it's never bothered me. Even when I go into a fairy shop and kick my heels up in the water, that would have been not typical behaviour on my behalf.
Do you feel like gay men who are very flamboyant are quite different from you? do we ever think, oh gosh?
Well, they're different people to me, aren't they? They're different types of persons.
Yeah. You don't feel that the way other gay people behave has any effect on how people might see you?
Well, yes, there's the stereotypes. Used to be perceived as what gay people were, but I don't think that happens now.
Mm.
I mean, the big drag queens are big drag queens. They're not typical gay people, and I hope they're not perceived as typical gay people.
I've been having an interesting conversation with people about this lately, with the marriage amendment bill, because a lot of my gay friends don't agree with the marriage amendment bill. They think everyone should be free to make choices, but the so-called mainstreaming of gay culture for some people is not considered a good thing. A Wellbeings talks about in an interview that he's done that he feels like some people, like the transgenders and the drag queens, have been sidelined by the mainstreaming of gay culture. And I've found that a very interesting conversation. But I guess, you know, we can't all be worried about everybody all the time, can we?
No, that marriage bill is polarising a lot of gay people. Not strongly, but some want to get married and some don't. And I think it should be an individual choice.
Have your friends been talking about it much?
No. No, even those who have been together for a while, they have no intention of getting married. I don't see the need, I guess. But mind you, they're mainly older people, so there might be a difference there. Young people might feel differently.
Do you remember the conversation that we had when Jay and Di decided to have a civil union?
Tell me.
So Jay's a male, and we had our civil union 7 years ago or something. And it was just after the civil union bill came in, and we wanted to celebrate it. And I asked him, and he told the story at the ceremony, that I asked him, will you civil union me, not will you marry me?
While you're sitting in the bath.
While we were sitting in the bath. And it wasn't supposed to be how I proposed, but that's just what happened. But when I sat you down and said, we're having a civil union, I remember you saying, why a civil union? You're a heterosexual couple. Do you remember?
No.
Conversation. And I said, because we want to celebrate this, and I never wanted to have a traditional marriage. And we had quite a conversation before you came around to, oh yeah, okay, I can see why you would want to do this. And we had that conversation with everybody.
I seem to remember you telling me at one point that you were doing it to support the fact that I was gay as well.
That we're a family with gay and straight members, and I didn't feel comfortable having a ceremony that nobody else could. Yeah. And you've defended me lately in a conversation at an art gallery with a friend of mine who was saying, I don't know why Emma had a civil union. Do you remember? And you explained to him all the reasons why.
Did I? Well done, John.
Very eloquently.
Good.
Yeah.
John, do you feel part of a larger rainbow community, or do you see yourself more as just an individual inside community generally?
Oh, I'm part of a community, yes, I think.
But a rainbow, I mean, do you sense like, I mean, and when you talk about, say, like lesbians and transgender, do you feel that you have any kind of community bond with simply because of their sexuality? Or
No, not really. I suppose I think in terms of the gay friends I have is my community. Although I do support gay activities where I can, if I can afford to. But coming back to what we were saying before, lesbians don't seem to take part in those same activities to the same extent, which is a shame.
What about something like the Big Gay Out, which you always go to?
Oh, I enjoy that.
Yeah. And you go with your mates and everybody's there.
Yep.
And does it feel like you're all a big, happy community?
No, not at all. But it's one place you can walk around holding a fella's hand without being embarrassed by it, which is quite nice. Don't ask.
And the return of the return of, well, it's not called Hero anymore, the Pride Parade, but the return of that, we've had some conversations about that lately too, haven't we? About how big it was this year and you went along. Remember?
Yes, it was very restrained this year compared with some of the ones that happened a few years ago. No lesbians whipping each other on a float, for example.
Did you think that was a good thing or a bad thing?
I didn't. I just accepted it as a parade this time. I hope next time there'll be a little more, less feathers and a little more seriousness, perhaps, put it that way.
What kind of seriousness?
I don't know. Just a bit more than what was shown in this particular parade.
Were the gay gardeners there this year?
No.
Oh.
No.
The gay gardeners were a highlight for me years ago at the Hero Parade in their Buzzy Bee outfits throwing buzz bars to the crowd, and Uncle Ray was one of those gay gardeners.
I remember Kerry, whatever the broadcaster's name is, when she saw that she was broadcasting about the parade, she saw the gay gardeners float, and she said, "Gay gardeners?
Really?"
It was quite extraordinary.
Kerry Woodham?
Yes. Why shouldn't gays be gardeners? Very weird.
And you've been part of the gay gardeners, or yes. You were for a long time, weren't
yep.
you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Not for a while now, though.
You got any particular clubs you go to that you want to discuss? Is that private? As in, you know, gay gardeners?
No, no. The only one I go to is the Sunday pub. And I think that building, that block is being raised for something else, so that might be the last night tonight.
But it's the Aquarius Club, is it?
Aquarius Club, that's right, yes.
And that's been going for a long time.
It's been going for many years in various different venues. Long before I heard of it, it's been going probably 20-odd years, I suppose, at least.
Yes, there's a picture in Mates and Lovers of I think, Hinare Toa at the what was called the Aquarius Club, but I don't know if it was the same one.
Oh, probably not.
And is it all guys?
Yes.
Older guys, younger guys, mixture?
Oh, mainly older guys. And if there are young guys there, they're usually Asians.
Yeah. You said a bit earlier about holding hands, and for a lot of gay people, holding hands in public is a big step, you know, being demonstrative. And I'm just wondering, within the family circle, how demonstrative are you in terms of, like, showing Emma, you know, holding a guy's hand or kissing or whatever? How does that work?
You'd have to remind me, actually, because you would have only seen me with Graham, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and although you've always been a hugger and a kisser with us, and we always held hands with you, I haven't ever seen you hold hands with a man or... I know Graham and you used to cuddle a bit, but I think you're always quite reticent in front of us.
Mm.
I always thought that's when I saw the stoic Kiwi bloke in you, actually, because you didn't, you know, show that kind of affection in front of us.
Well, all those years of hiding it, I suppose, they come to the fore, don't they? That's the way you live your life.
And do you get used to just not doing that?
Yep.
So what's it like when you do?
Yeah, me. Good stuff. Should happen more often.
Oh, when you came home from the gay out to our house, you had a sparkle in your eye. You were in a mischievous mood with your mates. And you're talking about holding hands. And I thought, how delightful. And I also thought, I cannot imagine not being able to hold hands with whoever I want.
Mm.
And how privileged I am with Jay.
It's also interesting that holding hands in public is one thing, but holding hands just in a family situation is another thing, and you'd think that holding hands in a family situation might be easier, but in some ways it's harder when it's people that you know really well.
It depends on where you'd be. I mean, why would you anyway? Unless you're sitting down having a cuddle, perhaps that would be about it, I think.
Jay and I hold hands.
No, I'm talking about a gay couple.
Right, yeah.
But I think that's one of the things that actually, like, for a gay couple, it's very much more a conscious decision we have to do. You know, we have to hold hands, where for a heterosexual couple, they don't even necessarily think about it. Mm-hmm. It just is so natural.
It's the other way around. A gay couple have got to think, we can't hold hands. Because we're in public, we can't do it. So that's the conscious decision. Not that you want to do it somewhere. You did want to do it, but you can't.
Is this two generations speaking about their experiences? Because I wonder if you have, you two have different experiences. Sorry, I'm bringing Gareth into the interview, but it is interesting, isn't it, that you should have different senses of that, perhaps.
Well, with my ripe old age, having lived a good part of my life under the radar, as it were, you just continue with that lifestyle, I think, to a certain extent. You don't change your habits overnight.
Speaking of age, I was speaking to someone yesterday, a couple that they were, I was talking about, you know, well, what is it like for an older lesbian couple holding hands? And they were saying there's a point you get to, and it's ageism, where people think you're past a point in your life and so you're not a sexual being anymore, that actually they just see you as an older person. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Not particularly. I don't give a bugger what people think, actually, in respect. So I'm still a sexual person, and I'll continue for as long as I can. It doesn't bother me.
We had, when we were doing one of our interviews, I remember someone talking about going into certain kinds of gay, particularly male bars, where a lot of people are younger and buff, and there's a look. And that he, as an older man, didn't always feel comfortable in those spaces. He felt ignored or marginalised. Do you ever go to places like that and you think, I'm invisible?
Or do you just not go to those places? No, I probably don't go to them. I've been with, when a young Irishman, I won't mention his name, was here. I used to go to places with him, and I'd think, in fact, I'd say to him, I'm the oldest person here by 40-odd years, but, you know, didn't matter too much. So I wouldn't go back on my own, certainly.
I'm remembering a story that I think you remember differently, and this is something that Dad and I find often, is my memory of the story is quite different from Dad's.
That's because okay. your stories get elaborated.
I am sometimes called the hyperbolizer. I admit to that. But my version of the story is one of the hero parades, when they were still on Ponsonby Road, you and Graham walked down the street holding hands, and Graham lost some of his clients for his business.
I think he lost one of his clients because of that, yes.
Yeah.
And he thought it was for that reason, yes, true.
Yeah, so someone had seen him and thought, oh, he's gay, don't want to go to him anymore in his business. And not long after that, I, for some reason, wrote a letter to the listener, because there was an article about gay parents and gay families. And I remember you actually went out and bought 10 copies of the listener and that letter, which included that story of someone when you're losing work and how, you know, revolting I thought it was. And it was quite a long time ago, and we're still having these kind of conversations, you know, about if people can hold hands in public and will it have impact on their lives. And it did have some impact on Graham's life, that particular incident, didn't it?
Yes.
And that had an impact on me to think that.
That would be, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
10-ish. You remember the story accurately, well done.
Thanks.
What do you think the biggest things you've learned from each other are?
You first.
Okay. Well, lately, because we've been doing this oral history project together, we're going around and interviewing older gay men, I've learnt from you about the fact that you're an expert in your area. Because when we started this, you felt, you couldn't go out and interview people on your own because you don't know how to do this stuff. And I had a little bit of technical knowledge. But then we went and did our training together and we learnt how to do oral histories. And you can use the equipment and I don't know how to use our new equipment now. And when we actually go out and do the interviews, despite the fact that you said, I can't, you know, I won't be able to say anything, you're the one with the knowledge, you're the one who draws people out. And what it made me realise was how you've always listened and how good you are at listening and drawing out stories and drawing people out into themselves. And I think that's a great skill and hopefully one I've learnt a bit from you and how to listen to other people. Because I talk so much, you know. But listening is a completely different skill that I think you have in spades. And I've loved seeing these interviews develop and you going off and doing them on your own now. I just think that's wonderful.
And you can teach an old dog new tricks in that case, can't you?
I would never say that.
Probably the thing I've learned about you is how intelligent you are, Emma. Your academic skills never cease to amaze me.
Thank you. That thing about academic skills, which I find so funny, is that when we've done the research before we've gone off and interviewed people, you've found out all sorts of things about people, and you found books I didn't find and ideas, and we get together and talk about it. That's research. And that's what you do. And you just don't do it in an academic context. But, yeah.
And John, can you tell me, you've alluded to, well, you've both alluded to that whole idea of always, looking forward, not regretting anything. Where do those kind of ideas come from? Where does that kind of value set come from?
I don't know. I guess I just don't see the point in worrying about something that's happened. So you move on from it. I don't know where it came from, though. I have no idea.
What were your parents like about the past? Do they regret things? Did they talk about the past?
No, not a lot. I grew up in a household where we were to be seen and not heard at the dinner table. We didn't talk at the dinner table. So I guess I was repressed in a way until I was in my 20s. I was very very shy and ingrown, if you like. It wasn't until later that I became more confident. It took me a long time.
When I want to ask you, because it's just occurred to me, you took off to Australia for a while. Was that a turning point for you in terms of getting out of home and having adventures?
I still embarrass myself by thinking that when I went to Australia, I was going to find myself. And I always thought of that in inverted commas. I was going to find myself. I think I'm still looking. But that was... I was able to be a gay man in Sydney when I went there when I was 20. So I suppose I did find myself to a certain extent, yes.
And did you feel confident being yourself as a gay man in Sydney?
Well, I wasn't any more outgoing then than I am now. But yes, I must have been, I guess.
Because that story of getting on the Wanganella or the Mongawai and going off to Sydney is a story that's come up in a number of our interviews. When people have gone overseas, over to Sydney, that's their big trip, and they have adventures. And
well, you're away from your family, so you can probably branch out a bit and do things that you wouldn't do at home, you wouldn't be able to do at home. Not that I did anything special over there. But it is a bit liberating leaving the country, going somewhere else. As everybody who goes on overseas found out, no doubt.
Was that in the 1960s? Or 50s? Sorry.
Probably 1956 or 57.
So did it feel like a long way to go then?
It was a three-day trip, I think, in boat and ship. I suppose it was a long way, yes.
Yeah.
I can't remember whether my brother was there then. I suppose he was in Sydney.
Can you imagine, John, what it would have been like having this kind of conversation with your father?
Oh, no way. My father, the license number on his car was BQ, and he made a joke about it being bloody Q, bloody queer, was his comment. And I remember him talking about Oscar Wilde in very, very downing tones. No, he wouldn't have condoned me in any way being gay. He might have come round to it, I don't know, but I certainly would never have had that conversation with him. With my mother, possibly, yes. Not my father.
And Emma, can you imagine doing this kind of interview with potentially a child of yours? How would you feel about doing something like this?
It's an interesting question. It would be possible. I can see how it could happen, because there are so many people having more sort of relaxed conversations about sexuality now, and it seems to me that it's acceptable to say, yes, I've been with women, yes, I've been with men, in a way that it wouldn't have been 30 years ago, I suppose. So yes, I can imagine having that conversation. But then again, if I actually had children, I might feel quite differently about it, because one of the things about the project Dad and I have done together is we're talking about people's sexual identity. Therefore, are we or are we not talking about sex? Because people don't talk about sex with their parents very often. So that fine line's been probably awkward sometimes, I would imagine. And we've certainly noticed in terms of what people say in front of me versus what people say if it's just you, it's quite different. Because I think we're father and daughter and I'm a woman. So, yeah, I think the conversations have changed, mostly. Yeah. Ask me if I ever have a child. 20 years' time.
How do you feel about today's recording here? I mean, do you feel this an uncomfortable or comfortable situation? How does it feel for you?
Well, it's been fascinating because I've heard things Dad's never told me. So it's been great for me. And I always enjoy talking to Dad. Yeah. So it's been great. I'm thinking, I can't wait for my sisters to hear this.
And I've enjoyed it too, because I enjoy talking to Emma as well, even though I don't enjoy being recorded.
Do you have any kind of final words for people that are potentially in the same situation?
All I can say is just live your life the best way you can. That's all you can do.
And I would say have as many conversations as you can, because you never know, you know, what you might learn from other people. Yeah.